have when you're still at home and your home is leaving you?
I want to disrupt business as usual, and the way I'm doing it is with disruptive language.
Glenn imagines a possible future era called the Symbiocene, when human activity will once again be fully interconnected with the ebb and flow of the rest of nature, and therefore cause no more destruction of life on Earth. He says the massive declines in bird populations are just one sign that we need to expand our imaginations about how we coexist with all forms of life.
Instead of being depressed about the future, we can have radical anticipation of a future that we ourselves are creating.
For BirdNote, I'm Nick Byard.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Hey, KBOO listeners. Come join us Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. here at the station for KBOO's April Fools for Fools First Friday Arts Walk for the eccentrics, the clowns, and the freaks. Enjoy an evening of art, live music, vendors, performers, food, drinks, and more. That's Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland, Oregon. Can't wait to see you there.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we have on author and activist Leonard Love. Leonard's going to be sharing with us a little bit about his story as a former AIC. And we're going to talk about the prison system and what we can do to make things better for everybody, and hear a little bit about Leonard's story. Leonard, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And so you're a published author, Leonard, is that right?
Yes, I have 4 published books on Amazon that I wrote while I was incarcerated.
Oh, great. That's just, I think it's so amazing when people are able to write books while they're incarcerated. I mean, I think those are such great books. And we're going to get into those a little bit. I definitely want to hear more about those.
Okay.
But before we start, I would just love it, Leonard, if you would just tell me a little bit about yourself. You know, just who is Leonard Love?
Okay, well, Leonard Love, I am born and raised in Columbus, Ohio. I come from a two-parent home. My father was in law enforcement, and my mom, you know, she worked, little jobs here and there. You know, we did all right. And, I grew up in the hood at first, and then my father got a nice paying job, and, you know, we moved to a nicer part in Columbus, Ohio. So as we, you know, lived, we moved, you know, to a nicer part. You know, my family, some of them, you know, they wasn't too happy that, you know, my father moved us away. But, you know, he made a statement that, you know, he wanted his two sons to have a better life than him. I have a younger brother named Marcus. But with that, you know, just a normal kid, you know, getting in trouble and trying to learn, you know, what this thing called life is. And eventually, you know, I allowed influence and peer pressure to lead me down a life of crime. So I started early, you know, I was about 10. That was back in 1985. And one of my cousins was selling crack, and he introduced me to selling crack, and I learned how to sell crack. And that fast money, it did something to me. So as I was growing up, you know, I went to school. I got okay grades, but, you know, I lived a double life. You know, in front of my mother and father, you know, I was Leonard. And then when I hit the streets, I was Big L. And I hid that for many years. And I ended up going to high school, and I was real good in football. And everybody thought I was going to go pro. And I graduated prom king and most likely to succeed. And, you know, I was real popular. And I tried the college thing and I didn't like it, you know. And I jumped right back into the street life, and I became very successful. And I ended up getting robbed, and it turned, you know, it kind of forecasted what was to come, because, you know, the money that I got robbed, it wasn't to the point to where, you know, I was broke. But in my mind, and being living a lifestyle, you know, a criminal street lifestyle, I just felt that I was entitled to more, which led me to start robbing banks. And I went on a robbing spree for many years. And in 2002, I got caught, and I ended up taking a 25-year federal prison sentence. And I went to federal prison at age 26, and I got out in 2002, I went to prison. And I got out last January 29th, 2024. I did 22 years of
federal. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations on getting out. That's so great. Mm-hmm. That's an amazing story, Leonard. That's just such an amazing story. Thank you for telling us a little bit about yourself. Can you share a defining moment from your time in federal prison that shaped your views on incarceration?
It would be the point that every, you know, inmate faces where you're, you know, you're newly in custody and you're going through the process, and just the weight of your sentence, it starts to kick in. And it's there where, you know, you face all the core relationship questions and issues as far as, like, you know, daily contact with friends and family and loved one. It comes to an abrupt, you know, end. You know, the embarrassment that, you know, you feel once, you know, your workplace, you know, they've been notified that you're incarcerated. And then, you know, you start to, as you're sitting in that cell and you're waiting for whatever's to come, you know, a bunch of questions fill your head, like, you know, well, you know, especially if you're in a relationship, you know, will my partner stay with me through this? You know, how will my bills get paid? You know, what about my kids? You know, and from that point forward, you see people's true colors. And, you know, I created something. I call that the moment of truth. I call that the moment of truth, to where, you know, that is when you realize that you messed up. It really sinks in.
You know, one of the issues that affects a lot of people who are incarcerated is mental health and rehabilitation. Given that 1 in 6 prisoners suffers from mental illness or substance abuse, what do you think the correction system needs to implement to address this crisis?
Well, excuse me. First off, you know, during those 22 years, you know, I soon found out that, you know, incarceration is like a big old a sane asylum, because you are correct, you know, and I think it's a little bit more than 1 to 6 prisoners suffer from a form of mental illness or substance abuse. I think it's a little higher. And I say that because you have so many people in prison who really need to be in drug rehabilitation programs. They don't need to be in prison. It's to the point to where, you know, they was out there robbing or doing whatever crime they did to try to feed their addiction, you know, and it could be something as easy as marijuana to something as hard as fentanyl and heroin. And you have a lot of inmates who are in prison because they were high or they were chasing, trying to get high. And, you know, once you get into the belly of the beast of the, you know, prison system, especially the federal prison system, you know, they don't care, you know. So to me, what needs to happen, it needs to be more, you know, mental health and drug rehabilitation programs out there in the court system, to where, you know, they can identify that this person has a serious problem. And it's not so much they're not a criminal, but they need more help with their mental and their substance abuse than just locking them up for long prison sentences. I would just say, you know, the correctional system as a whole is like a gunshot wound, like, you know, and they're trying to put a Band-Aid on a gaping wound, and it's not working. It hasn't been working. And until they address the issue and they start separating people who, you know, really need help, then it's going to continue to just be where they're just filling up these prisons with people who have mental issues and who have substance abuse problems, and not so much are criminals. They've done a criminal act, but they did a criminal act because they're not getting the adequate help on the street.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So my next question I wanted to ask you, you entered when you were pretty young. I mean, you weren't quite a youth, but you must have seen a lot of young kids come in.
Yeah.
With over 48,000 youth incarcerated in the United States, what interventions or alternatives to incarceration would be most effective for young offenders?
Well, for once again, like I told you in my situation, you know, I was 10 when I got into the criminal lifestyle. What needs to happen is, you know, there needs to be more counselors and mentorships in schools, starting at an early, I would say from, you know, third grade on up. There needs to be, you know, they got all these, you know, you can go to the library, they have recess and things like that, but there needs to be like a, you know, a liaison who is educating the youth about, you know, being, you know, obedient to their parents and, you know, not listening to the, you know, a certain music like rap music and things like that, that perpetuate and tell, you know, youth, especially minority youth, to, you know, break the law and be bad, you know. So I think that also, you know, parents need to, at an early age, they need to watch and be careful of what their youth are watching on TV, listening to and things like that. Because once again, peer pressure, especially for males, is a big portion of why a lot of youth are getting in trouble.
Thank you. Recidivism is a big issue, and it's one of the main issues that we talk about on the show. And, you know, because we want to like try to encourage as much as we can, you know, people not returning, and we want the system to work in a way so that people don't return. What are the biggest barriers formerly incarcerated individuals face when they're reentering society? Mm-hmm. And you might be able to answer this with some really fresh insight, Leonard, considering you're somewhat newly released. I mean, it's been about a year. But what are some of the biggest barriers that formerly incarcerated individuals face when they're returning to society? And how can we better support reintegration efforts?
Well, I'm going to say this, you know, just speaking from both from a personal experience as well as the experience of some of those who I've mentored, you know, who were, you know, released before me, violated, returned to prison, you know, there's two main barriers that are the core, you know. Let's start with, you know, a lack of support and a lack of understanding, which start at the family level, you know. Family members, just from my experience, family members have held the inmate down for years, you know, sometimes decades, and they are ready to transfer that responsibility once that inmate is, you know, released. So, you know, the inmate immediately feels pressure to find a job, you know, where they can contribute and get their life together. Plus, you know, we want to show society that we're not who they say we was, you know, were when we were convicted. So, you know, while this is, you know, the end goal, the inmate, you know, is dealing with getting a readjustment to society. And, you know, Emma, this can be easily overwhelmed without patience and understanding. And they don't teach you that in prison. That's something you have to learn on your own, you know. Also, things that, you know, others really don't think about, like colors being super bright, because, you know, inmates have been in dark and gray cells for years. You know, when I came home and I went to Walmart, you know, I kept squinting a lot because I wasn't used to those bright lights, you know, because, yeah, you know, I was in, yeah, and people don't think about that type of stuff. So, you know, that's kind of like, you know, mentally it kind of messes with you. You know, it's like a sensory overload. Also, you know, technology, especially for me, you know, I went in 2002 and got out in 2024. So, you know, technology changed so drastically that, you know, it took me a minute to catch on, you know. So, you know, doing things as simple as, you know, paying for groceries using a credit card with a chip, it took some adjustment for me. And I'm sure it takes some adjustment for many other millions of, you know, inmates who are released, or hundreds of thousands of inmates that are released yearly. You know what I'm saying, though? Let me think. You know, the inmate, pretty much, he's going to need to get, you know, a driver's license and, you know, insurance. And these things take time, and it's just an adjustment, you know. And it's pretty much, you know, we need help. When an inmate comes home, especially from doing a long prison sentence, he's not going to be able to do it on his own. He's going to need help.
Yeah. Great. That's a great reminder. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Please.
Well, no. And I was just thanking what you said. And, you know, with regard to the community, I mean, you know, the most prominent issue in supporting a newly released inmate, you know, is in the job sector. You know, there are so many jobs that state fair chance, but I'm here to tell you that, you know, it's not, they're not fair. You know, I can't tell you how many job applications I completed that when I first came home, I would say over 50, and it was hurting. It kept stinging that, you know, I'm like, I did my time, I learned my lesson, give me a chance, you know. And just being turned down because of my background, you know, it kept hurting, but you got to be strong. You have to keep pushing, you know. Being transparent and upfront about, you know, who they are, and, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work, because, like I said, though, some jobs are, you know, scared when they see that felony, you know what I'm saying? And it's just, and it makes you feel like, you know, you're wasting your time and your energy, and, you know, your motivation just, it gets depleted. And then, you know, you constantly hear people saying that, you know, well, you can go work here, you can go work there, and, you know, $10, $11. And, you know, the cost of living is way more than that. But there's a bunch of jobs out there. But you have to crawl before you walk. And I learned that. And what I had to do was I had to suck it up. And I had to say, Leonard, you got this. And I worked 3 jobs for 4 months before I end up starting my own business. So I had to crawl before I walk.
Good for you. That's great. What is your business?
I am a medical carrier. So I have a basically what I do is I go, I work for myself. I'm a 1099 employee. And basically I get contracts. I got contracts with a couple of hospitals, nursing home, and pharmacies in Columbus, Ohio. And I pick up, you know, any and everything from medications, documents, kidneys, body part, whatever that they need me to deliver. And sometimes it's stat would mean it which means it needs to be immediate delivered. So say a couple of days ago, I took a kidney from Columbus to Cleveland, Ohio. And I got paid pretty good for that.
What an amazing profession, though. That sounds so interesting.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great. Congratulations. We're talking with Leonard Love here on KBOO Community Radio. This is Prison Pipeline. Leonard is a formerly incarcerated adult who has written 4 books and is a public speaker. Leonard, tell us a little bit about your books.
Okay. So while I was incarcerated, you know, I started off at the high level. So let me break it down. So in the federal prison system, the highest level you can go to is ADX. So ADX is where like the Unabomber and, you know, guys who have like really high profile crimes is ADX. Then once you go down and the step down from there is a USP. That stands for United States Penitentiary. And then from down there is a medium high. And then from down there is a low. And then after a low is a camp. So I didn't reach ADX, but I started at a USP, which is the second high, which is the second highest that you can get to in the federal prison system.
Okay.
And what did you, I'm so sorry. What did you, because I did, what did you ask me again?
That's okay. Don't worry about it. And this will all be edited. So it'll all sound really good.
Okay.
I was just asking you if you could tell me about your books.
Okay. I'm so sorry. So basically what I did was, I wrote, I was on lockdown. I was in the shoe for 6 months and, you know, and I said, yeah, I spent out of 22 years, I did 4 years in the shoe. While I was in the shoe, I said, you know what, Leonard, you gotta do something to help the youth. You gotta do something to help people, to educate people that this is not the way to go. So my first book I wrote is called Welcome to Prison. And Welcome to Prison basically is a guide to when you first get incarcerated in the federal prison system, and I take you through what happens from the arrest to the time you open up the door when you get sentenced to the prison that you're going to. And then my second book is called Welcome to Prison 2, Inside Hell. And that book is basically about once you open the door and you walk into prison, what goes on all levels. And, you know, it's uncut. I do my best to, you know, make it to where, you know, the youth can understand it. And I get kind of graphic and I tell them through my eyes, through my 22 years, I was at 14 different prisons in 22 years. My other books I wrote is called Chameleon. And that is basically about my life story that I turned into an urban novel. And it has twists and turns and there's 2 parts to it. So those are the 4 books that I have. Also, I have, I wrote 8 books altogether. So I'm going to be releasing some more books in about three more months.
Oh, great. And you're also a public speaker?
Yes. So what I have been doing, I haven't got my, I need to get these 40 hours of peer-to-peer, but to get my certificate. But they have let me talk in some schools, and I went down and go and talk at the YMCAs. And, you know, also I work for Uber and Lyft, and I have a TikTok. Sometimes I do Uber Chronicles to where, you know, I get youth in my car and I talk to them and we have a dialogue of back and forth of what they're doing. And then I tell them this and that, and they, you know, they listen to me. So I've been getting a couple of views on that.
Oh, great. And how can people find you online, Leonard, if they want to look you up?
People can go to my TikTok, which is leonard.elove, Also, I have a blog site, leonardelove.com, and I have a Facebook, Leonard E. Love. They can reach me all
okay.
there. Okay.
Great. Great. We're talking with Leonard Love. This is Prison Pipeline here on KBOO. Leonard, what are some of the most significant issues with prison conditions today that the public may not be aware of?
Oh, man. I don't even know where to begin on that one.
Maybe just a couple. Maybe a couple of issues, since we only have so much time.
Well, a couple issues, you know, as far as the what's going on in prison that a lot of people don't know is that, you know, those prisons are old, so they have a lot of asbestos. There's a lot of decay. There's a lot of mold. Also, the officers, for better lack of reason, they really don't patrol like they should. So it's dangerous. And a lot of them turn their eye to when, you know, someone's getting assaulted, you know. So, you know, once again, it's very dangerous. There's a lot of killing and murdering in prison, especially federal prison on the higher levels, that doesn't get talked about or doesn't get presented to the public. That, you know, they don't know about. And it's sad. So those are pretty much, you know, the factors that are big, which are, you know, the uncleanliness, the lack of fixing these prisons up and making them safer. You know, I was at a certain prison and people were catching cancer from, you know, the installation being old and breathing in, you know, toxic chemicals from stuff, from old buildings.
Well, thank you. That's really informative. Can you tell me, I was reading a little bit about your Men 101 mentoring program.
Mm-hmm.
What is that about, and what impact has it had on people who are incarcerated?
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for, you know, bringing that up. Thank you. I started Men 101 because basically just getting tired of, it was back in 2005, and I was in probably 3 years, and I was at, I was in Raybrook, New York, and I seen four individuals leave three times in 3 years and come back. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, can we trade places? You know, I just pled to 25 year sentence. And, you know, they was just like, you know, Leonard, we come to prison and they're not helping us. And we're safer in here than we are out there. And I'm like, what? So, you know, I sat down and that troubled me, and I came up with Men 101. So if anybody who's been to college, you know, they have Math 101 and Algebra 101, you know what I'm saying? It's like the introduction. So I came up with Men 101, and basically that is a mentoring initiative that seeks to provide incarcerated men with valuable life and transitional skills to facilitate their reentry into society and to combat recidivism. And I have a mission objective I came up with, and the mission objective is achieve or objectify through a program curriculum that is specifically designed to explore, you know, guidelines that are that are crucial for psychological education and reentry. And I taught that for about 18 years.
That's great. Thank you so much. And that sounds like a great program. It's really made a difference. Well, Leonard, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today on Prison Pipeline. Can you just tell me one more time, how can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more about you or find out about your books?
Once again, people can go to Amazon and they can look up Welcome to Prison, Welcome to Prison 2, Chameleon, and Chameleon 2, all written by me, Leonard E. Love. You just type that in and that'll pop up by them. Also, you can reach me at my email, which is mrleonard.love@gmail.com. You can follow me on TikTok, Leonard.E. Love. You can also follow me on Facebook, Leonard E. Love. And pretty much, you know, I'm available. If you need me, I got you. I don't sugarcoat nothing. And I just want to see, you know, families of the incarcerated be educated. I want them to know the truth about what's really going on.
Well, Leonard, it's been a real pleasure having you on Prison Pipeline. Congratulations on your recent release.
Thank you.
And best wishes to you. It sounds like you've got a really bright future ahead of you. So
thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Prison Pipeline.
Okay. Thank you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special